For Those Who Inquired podcast, and for those who inquired, it's Edward Marlowe and Neil Bradley. How are you, Neil?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I am doing pretty good. Sitting here at my kitchen table. Got a plan for some things, but I definitely wanted to talk to you first and foremost about what a Super Bowl.
It's a good game.
What a Super Bowl. It's so hard because of recency bias to say things like, well, that's the greatest halftime show I've ever seen, or that's the greatest Super Bowl I've ever seen, or that was the greatest quarterback performance. But I just, in essence, I just thought it was a really good game from start to finish.
Well, the recency bias doesn't bother me, because if you laid $100 out there, I couldn't tell you who played in the Super Bowl the year before. I promise. Not a clue. I just know who played in it this week. Right. And it was a great game.
Yeah, it was a good game. Last year's Super Bowl, Tom Brady and the Buccaneers defeated.
There you go. I just know Tom Brady beat
won
the opponent. So
yeah, he beat a good team. You know what? Gosh dang it, Neil. Now I'm gonna have to Google.
How about that? I would have dreamed. I thought Ed would be like, you idiot, I could name the last 20 years of them.
I'm Googling it right now, live. I don't even care. I gotta know now. Now I feel bad. I just knew that Tom Brady won.
Yeah, I remember that because my youngest grandson and I were the only ones for Brady at the party last year.
Oh, yeah, beat the Kansas City Chiefs.
That's right. There you go.
Beat Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs.
All right.
Well, the reason I think I drew a blank there is because I forget Patrick Mahomes is so young, and he's already played now in two Super Bowls and has already been a Super Bowl champion.
That's pretty good.
It's insane to think of how close they came this year to being in the Super Bowl, but not the Cincinnati Bengals made it. And I do want to briefly talk about this game. You know, there's a lot of vitriol on the holding call inside of the 10 that led to the game-winning touchdown for the Los Angeles Rams. I almost said St. Louis Rams.
So he didn't hold? Looked like he held to me. Not much.
Yeah.
But either you did, or it's like being a little pregnant. Either you are or you're not. He either did hold or he didn't hold. And he actually, by rule, he did hold.
By rule, he held. It's just something I get it from Cincinnati fans. It's not something that was called a lot in the game.
Yeah.
More than half of the game's fouls were called in that final drive. Of course, like I told some people, with the Super Bowl on the line, everybody's skittish.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to make the game-winning play, jump the line of scrimmage, get the sack, get the big interception, get the big deflection.
Wow.
Refs want to make the right call. Everything's on the line, so everybody's playing tight at that point. I thought early on in the game, it was egregious that Cincinnati went up at the start of the third quarter because of Jalen Ramsey, who, by the way, got cooked numerous times in that game. Elite corner. I couldn't play what he was doing, but to see it on live, Cincinnati had a great scheme, you know, to get one-on-one coverage on the outside. But there's no question that Cincinnati receiver grabs his face mask, brings him down to the turf. He's wide open for the 75-yard touchdown. So we don't even necessarily have a football game, per se, unless that touchdown is scored. Now, maybe Cincinnati scores in some other way, but I just taking all of those things to as a non-interested fan and who I didn't care who won, you know, when the Titans when the Titans lost to Cincinnati, I was just like, well, I just want a good football game now because I wanted to see the Titans make it to the Super Bowl at least, but they did not. Cincinnati did. Two things came to my mind: that final drive from Stafford to Cooper Kupp. Kupp, I think what's so special about him, and you and I see this on a weekly basis with Murray State football, that's an FCS football player in Cooper Kupp that just did that. And we've seen good FCS football players before. Richard Dent came from Tennessee State. You know, Kurt Warner was from UNI. I'm trying to think of other guys that have been super, super. Joe Flacco. The elite Joe Flacco, you know, came from, you know, Vermont.
Steve McNair,
absolutely. Alcorn State playing the Super Bowl. I'm just thinking of MVPs. That's just a list of MVPs that are FCS players.
Oh, gotcha.
But Phil Sims came from Morehead State, you know, MVP for the Super Bowl. And as a matter of fact, I think didn't he open that Super Bowl with 22 straight completions or something like that?
Dude,
I'd have to go back and look.
Remember, I don't remember who played in the Super Bowl last year.
That's fair. Barely remember who played this.
I do know
Sunday.
Phil Sims.
Right.
That I know.
What I'm saying is, like, you've got to see FCS players at that level do what they just did. Cooper Kupp just had a historic, receiver season We may never see it again. Now, he may replicate it next year, but we may never see statistically what he was able to put together this year. I almost said St. Louis again. The Los Angeles Rams defense in the second half, I think, ended up being the difference. I mean, they were able to get so much pressure on Burrow, who was sacked an NFL record 19 times in the postseason. So, you know, you got to think that's probably priority number one for Cincinnati.
I would think
forward.
So. I would think so.
What did you think about the halftime show?
Well, it was. I actually don't ever care about any halftime show. Halftime show is time to go load up on the food. So that's what I used it for, load up on the food and the drinks, went to the bathroom, and then they were still doing. I just couldn't really believe that you would have a halftime show with Snoop Dogg, and you showed the Doritos commercials before the halftime show. I mean, to me, the Doritos commercials should have come afterward. That's absolutely horrendous product placement. I'm firing somebody today. If I'm at Frito-Lay, you're out. You're looking for a job. That's got to come after Snoop Dogg.
That is brilliant.
But you know, other than that, it was fine. Also, I heard M&Ms were on there, and I didn't see any. I thought the dancing, I was looking for that.
No, it was
the different colors one.
The singular M&M.
And it was some white dude in a beard or something.
That was him.
So I love it.
You're
never going to make, no matter what music you have, it doesn't make any difference. You're never going to make everybody happy because everyone likes their own kind of music. I think it's good to change it up. Well, that was good to have that. You've had all sorts of things. Nobody's boobs flopped out this year that I know of, except maybe Dr. Dre's. I think it was 50 Cent. I think maybe his did.
Was.
He picked up a pound or 10 maybe lately.
He looked jacked.
Okay.
No, I will say that.
He looks something.
Yeah.
But anyhow, that was my only complaint, was that the game was good. That's what I was for. And as I said, it doesn't matter who you have on for the musical thing. I'm not going to watch the halftime. I don't care.
Speaking of loading up on the food, what's the one go-to or the one thing that you had to have? We were so busy the last couple of weeks. I wanted to do some pre-gaming, some pre-discussion on your Super Bowl. I know you and I have talked about meals before and how cool they can be for games. What was your go-to? Like, what's your, like, oh, my God, I have to have this for Super Bowl?
Well, usually we have deer chili. That's what is the fare. My son and grandsons and granddaughter all like having me over, so I go over and watch. This year it was actually beef chili. I honestly couldn't tell the difference.
Oh,
but
man.
For the appetizers, that it must good. Be the homemade sausage balls. They must be homemade, and they were absolutely perfect. So they were good. You know, we had some wings, had the chili, stupid amount of, you know, cookies and stuff like that. And first they had a fruit tray. And then I guess if, in case any animals showed up, they had some vegetables there so they could eat, you know, the food. So if you brought a pet or something, they'd have something to eat.
I forget. Vegetables are not allowed in your diet. But you're not going to like our meal then. So the dishwasher and I ended up, I had like pretzels and like cream cheese before.
Well, yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, pretzels and cream cheese before. But then our main course was a banh mi bowl. And
so was it what?
Banh mi. Okay. B-A-N-H-M-I, banh mi.
Okay.
It's a Vietnamese sandwich. It's an Asian sandwich. But it was in bowl form, so it was deconstructed. So it was raw cabbage. Now, part of it you would have enjoyed. It was the raw cabbage.
You don't have me yet.
Yeah.
You had me at bowl. But
So the bowl, the meat part of it was like a chicken sausage ball. That's the meat part of the sandwich.
That's good.
But then it also has like an ancient grain, like a rice mixed with like quinoa and...
I know what that is.
You know, different types of grains that are boiled and buttered and salted. And then on top of all of that, we had pickled carrots, pickled red onion, and pickled cucumber, which are just pickles.
God.
It was delicious. Oh, just all the different, cold, the hot,
God.
The new, the...
I may have to puke here in just a moment. Thinking of that.
The squishiness of like the ancient grains and then the raw cabbage underneath it is like the bed of crunch. It was delightful.
Lord.
But I mean, have you ever had a banh mi sandwich?
I don't know what it is. I've never had a roadkill sandwich either, but I'm not going to eat it. I mean, it's just But it might be good. Who knows?
Yeah. So I'll give you just a quick synopsis of what the banh mi is.
You just told me what it was.
Yeah, but in Vietnamese cuisine, it is a short baguette with a thin, crisp crust and soft, airy texture. It's often split lengthwise and is full of savory ingredients like a submarine sandwich.
Jeez. And just really think, we went over there to help save those folks from communism, and that's the best kind of food they can come
up
with.
Are you kidding me? What it has sweet, tangy pickled vegetables and a broiled chicken breast, which is basically everything I just told you that was in it. It's delicious. The banh mi, magnifique.
The meat was fine. That sounds good. I'd take that. So you could leave that aside for me, and then you could put the rest in it. That's fine.
All right. Well, the next time we make banh mi sandwiches.
Oh, don't call me because I don't want it.
Let's actually talk about some things that people are going to super care about. How about those racers, Neil?
Yes. Rolling right along. Since the last time we talked, ranked. Now, the second week, they've been ranked this week, moving up to 21 in both the polls. It's been phenomenal. But this past week, you know, this is a team that's beaten up a little bit, went to Tennessee State. They got beaten up a little more there with Tevin taking the fall, blocking the shot. It really physical game. It really was. Came from 13 down to win that one. And I'm surprised. I checked with KJ Williams on the bus to see if his back was okay. I don't know if you know this, but he carried the team in the second half.
Yeah.
You know, you put 31, you know, 11 other players on your back and carry them for 20 minutes. But he was okay. You know, he had 31 and a half. Mm-hmm. Now, is that a record? Like, it's a record of the most points I've seen. If there's been more, I don't know when it would have ever been.
In a half? What did
– At Murray State.
You're right. What did – No, he didn't score 31. I was thinking about Cannon when he
27. First half.
That's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah. Juice Hill, 25.
Against Belmont.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's been some 20s, but, I mean, 31 and a half? That's a 62-point pace. That's
unbelievable. Mind you, let's talk about the Tennessee State game for a minute. You're down, again, down 13. They cannot miss from three. They open the game shooting almost 60% in the first 9.5 minutes. They take a 25-12 lead. I remember all this. I was on my way home driving. I was listening to you and Kenny, actually. And, you know, you see Cooper makes a three, and they just kept falling. And you're just like, okay, well, it's not going to be the night. You know, it's the Gentry. It's loud. Racers are ranked. It's rambunctious. We know the Aristocrats are terrific.
Yeah.
They bring the thunder in Gentry. Fans are there. Eddie George was there.
He was.
The Tennessee State football coach and legendary Tennessee Titan. Love the man. So you've got everybody in town at that game and everybody else at the other half of town watching Belmont-Morehead State. Lot at stake in these moments, just how tight it was. You think about how tight Morehead was playing Belmont. Belmont roars back, steals that game. I mean, steals that game no sooner than KJ had put up the 31 to help pace, you know, Murray State to another big win. And you think, oh, my God, we're going into a hornet's nest on Saturday because Morehead just lost this critical game to Belmont, and the Racers kind of hobbled out of Tennessee, out of Nashville, thankful for a win. And then we get to Saturday.
Yeah, I do want to mention something.
No, please do.
The Tennessee State band, they didn't play last year due to COVID, of course.
Right.
They hadn't played this year either. Suddenly, COVID, I guess, decided, I'm out. So they were okay to play Thursday night.
A fair point.
So shockingly, but fantastic. I mean, I'm glad they were because that's part of the experience going there and hearing them play because they're really good.
To describe this to fans, and I wasn't there this year. I had work on Thursday night and was listening on my way home. But, like, to understand, I've covered games there numerous times. You've been to scores of games mm-hmm. there. The word that I can think of with that band inside of that building is cacophony. It is the word I would choose. It is disastrous for a coaching staff, for players. It's like football in an arena because you cannot hear the call.
Yeah.
You can't hear what your teammate's saying next to you when they're playing. Now, they can't obviously play during games and stuff like that, but timeouts.
Except football.
Things like that. Except for football, they can just play whenever the hell they want.
Yeah.
But they're not supposed to.
They're not
but
supposed
they
to.
They do anyways, yeah. And it's wonderful because what's the fine for that? But for basketball, during those timeouts and things like that, your coaching staff has to, like, huddle like football and talk at the floor because you're not going to hear otherwise.
Yeah, yeah. If you're wondering, well, how come the band for the Racers isn't that loud? Well, they would be if they had about 100 pieces of brass, and that's what they have. That huge drum section, and it's just the volume that they have. And also that smaller building, smaller building in terms of bouncing the sound off. And it's insanely loud. We have VU meters on our equipment, and when they get into the red, that means you're over-modulating. And with me sitting there not saying a word, they weren't peaking in the red. They were just red the whole time. They stayed right there, which means when we talked, no one could probably hear anything we were saying. I mean, to be honest about it, we were just like,
just garbled.
We have no way around that. And that's fine during the game. The thing is, they play for about 15 minutes during the post-game show when no one's there but them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they're a tremendous band. Glad that they were able to play. And it really added to my final time there at the Gentry Center.
Oh, you say that.
It was fantastic.
You watch when there's new non-conference schedule comes out next year and it's Tennessee State.
Yeah.
But I see what you're saying.
That isn't gonna happen, I can promise that.
Probably not.
Well, unless Matt's not the coach. If Matt's the coach, they will not be playing there. I can promise that.
Yeah, that's an interesting point and a fair point. I'm going to bring up just a couple of box scores because we're going to talk about the women as well. But for the men, just a quick review of kind of what happened. 73-62 win. Tennessee State, you know, kind of had some things going. A little bit of balance. He had a showing from one Jalen Dupree, 6 minutes.
Oh, and, about that.
And then he poked a bear.
Yeah, hits the shot, turned around, said something to the bench. And KJ didn't really like it that much. So he comes down, hits a three, then comes down, hits another three, gets fouled on it. And it was on from that point.
It was.
It was like, get me the ball. And not only are we going to win, I'm going to annihilate these guys. And he did. They tried double teaming him. They couldn't get to him quick enough. No matter what they did, it was like, we'll pack it up in the lane. Like, that's all right. I'll shoot the 12-footer. I'll hit the 14-footer. There's no way you can stop me tonight. And they couldn't.
Nope. No, they couldn't. KJ scores 39. And then your next best scorers were Justice Hill and DJ Burns with 9 points each. Tevin, 2 of 10, 2 for 7 from three, but had 5 assists, 7 rebounds, kind of flirted with his own triple-double in a way, only 1 turnover. That's another thing that was worth mentioning, 18 assists, 6 turnovers.
Yeah.
And that's what helped them get out of that game.
Yeah, that was just a big, big-time performance on the road in a tough environment.
We talk about a tough environment and on the road once again, and we look at what happened on Saturday. You know, I'm just going to go ahead and fast forward to the final 7.5 minutes of that game because when you're down 49-40 and KJ picks up his fourth foul, you think, okay, what a run. Morehead's good. Morehead's really good. Give them their credit. Give them their due. And they still deserve the credit. Spoiler, Morehead didn't win this game. But at that moment, 49-40, Morehead leads. He picks up his fourth foul. Morehead State had a 91% chance of winning that game. 91, Neil. And that's just ESPN stats and info. Anything can happen in basketball. We see that all the time. It's no different than all those years ago, a couple years ago, in fact, when Murray State had a 91% chance to win at EIU.
Yeah.
And EIU made their big run. I'm not trying to compare. We know comparison's the thief of joy.
Right.
Thank you, Matt McMahon. I agree. But my point being is that anything can happen in basketball. They won the game. I don't need to tell anybody that. Everybody knows. The Racers are still, they're now 14-0 in conference play. Neil, your sideline there, you and Kenny, what do you see in the final 7.5 minutes other than determination?
No one making shots. That's what I saw. I mean, Kenny, we went to, I think it was the under 8 when we're down. It's like, Kenny, how are we going to win this game? I think I still have it on the tape
because
we rolled the whole time.
They were still shooting 33% from the floor.
We don't have anyone making shots.
No
KJ's,
one.
You know, got some foul issues now. I have no idea. I mean, what are you going to do, like stop him every time up the floor? And it was like they went up there and went, yeah, let's do that. And then Juice Hill couldn't make a shot.
Couldn't.
He's 0 for 4 from 3 range. I think he ended up 2 for 11 from the field.
Correct.
But rather than giving it up, he went, I'll tell you what, I'm going to try to get inside. Maybe they'll foul me, get me to the free throw line. If not, maybe dish it off, somebody get a dunk. Well, he started fouling him. He started making free throws.
7 of 8.
Then they started paying attention to him. He flies down the right side of the lane. They screw up a switch, And lo and behold, there's number 10 in the corner, wide open, who had made a three-pointer all night, by the way.
Tevin Brown started 0 for 6 from 3.
So
all of his shots were from 3.
Every other time you'd go, yes. But this time it's like, don't know. Swish, Tevin Brown.
Cuts it to 50-47.
Yeah. And from that point, you figure you got a chance to win the game.
Yeah.
And that they started getting stops. You could tell they started picking up a little momentum. KJ did some really good things. It was just magnificent. And but I think the big play down the stretch, and Matt said it on the coach's show tonight, the play that they got from Tevin where he drives baseline for the shot, he said the setup in that when they had talked about what to do, he said most everyone thinks, well, what kind of play are you going to draw up? He goes, we didn't draw up a play. We drew up a player. We thought, who do you want to take this shot? And it was still, despite his night, Tevin Brown. So Tevin gets up. He's on the wing.
Left side.
His purpose was to try to get a good pass into KJ and let him lay it in. Broom did a great job defending it.
Terrific play.
So KJ's job was to come up high, and Tevin's read was, what is Broom doing? He gave a jab. Broom knew he had to commit baseline or up. He committed up, and Tevin flooded the baseline, gets the layup. There it is. They got a little bit of a fortunate play on the other end where Cooper missed the looked like a wide open shot. I think he was anticipating contact, and then get the rebound, and KJ makes the free throws, and it's over.
Unreal. I want to give a little bit of a shout out, first of all, to Morehead State. Just first and foremost, this is still a team that can win 24 games, 23 games. They're 19-8, 11-3 in the OVC. They can win their final. They've got 14 games. They've got 4 games left. They could move to 23-8. You know, Murray State can move to 20. Let's see, they're 24-2. They can go to 28-2. You know, Jeff Bidwell, WPSD Local 6, one of the things that he has made mention of already, and he's exactly right, the math is there. All the Racers need to go is 2-2 in these final 4 games, and they'll have no less than the co-share and the one seed.
And the double tree.
And the double tree,
right.
Which is what you mean, what you need. You need the double tree for the double bye.
Top 2 seeds stay in the double tree.
That's right.
I've done it the other way. This is the way.
This is the way. That's it. That is a terrific Mandalorian reference. This is the way. Not only is it the way to a potential at-large berth into the NCAA tournament, it is the way for whatever happens from an NIT perspective or whatever happens. And I know we don't want to talk NIT, but just all scenarios, you want to be in the double tree for premier success. That is the leadership poll, the leader poll for success in Evansville and whatever your postseason tells you afterward. Statistically, you take a look at this game. First of all, again, back to Morehead State, Trey Hollowell. They go on a – Murray State used a 15-3 run to win the game. The 3 points was Trey Hollowell from Hopkinsville tying the game on a what I felt like was just a dagger in the balloon. Props to Morehead for staying as resilient as they possibly could in that run. It was a well-contested three. Hollowell, by the way, of Hopkinsville, former UHA star, and played at Wofford for 4 years as a graduate transfer. He's made a three-pointer. He's made the second most three-pointers in the OVC, not named Tevin Brown. Tevin has 81. Hollowell has 76, actually. He's really good. He's made a three-pointer in all 27 games for Morehead State. He's on a 27-game three-point make streak. Terrific player. They put the ball in his hands. He made a play. Tevin's shot was unbelievable in its own right. Just that game in the final 8 minutes was such a rock fight just to make something happen. And we're not even talking about, I felt bad, Talon Cooper thought he was going to get fouled by KJ, had the game-tying layup. Too much English.
Yeah, a little too much on it. But I think he thought, I'm going to get contact.
Yeah.
I want to be sure I get this enough on it and get a, maybe an and one. And it never came.
He didn't even get touched.
KJ, one other thing I wanted to mention, and you look at a stat line that he has, and it isn't real impressive.
Right.
But Matt talked about it on the coach's show tonight about the 8 minutes of some of the best defense he's ever seen from Nick McMullen. Jordan Skipper Brown, unavailable, still has a foot injury dealing with that. And he blocked 2 Jani Broom shots.
Mm-hmm.
defended amazingly well other than that, too. And the Racers do not win that game without his contributions. They look minuscule along his stat line, but they're not. McMullen helped the Racers win the game, pull him out of there, and if no one else is able to pull up the slack for him, they lose.
Yeah,
because it's going to be two layups for Broome, and that's enough to beat you.
Yeah, you're right. It would have put them in such a hole because both of those layups ended up being defensive rebounds. A couple of quick notes again from that game. Racers were 3-for-19 from three. Two of those three-pointers were from Carter Collins, and Carter did not shoot it well, 3-for-10, but he was terrific, no turnovers. DJ Burns, pretty strong on the rebounding effort. Murray State had a 12-0 offensive rebounding edge before Moorhead picked up their first offensive rebound. Furthermore, the Racers in general just had a massive rebounding lead. As a matter of fact, they finished the raw offensive rebounding lead 13-4. Got out rebounded defensively, didn't matter. They won the glass offensively. It got them those second chance points. And then you take a look at second chance points. 10 second chance points to 3. 19 points again off of turnovers.
That's the big stat of that.
That's
game.
It. Moorheads could not stop turning the ball over. They just, for whatever reason, they felt the pressure. They got tense. Racers came away with 8 steals, by the way, 4 of them KJ Williams, and that's my next point. When's the last time, Neil, that you saw, and I mean, I'm sure it's, you know, been yesterday, but it really hasn't. When's the last time you saw a 6'10", 6'11" center averaging a double-double, but also leading the conference in conference play in total steals? Because that's what KJ Williams is doing right now.
That's not done.
No.
So what you'd probably do if you weren't from Murray State and knew better, you'd say, go refigure it because that's got to be wrong.
Well, it's not.
6'10 guys, 6'11, whatever the heck, they don't do that. But he does, and he's become really good at the key about him and a difference in a guard. The reason guards can do it, they're usually off the ball up top. They'll shoot a passing lane. That's how they're going to get the steals. But for him, he usually has a hand on a guy. And a lot of times you have to release the hand to go get the ball. If you have the hand on, reach around, and you make any contact, they're going to call a foul on you.
Yeah.
And more often than not, he's able to get around there, poke that ball away, go up the floor. And he's just really crafty at that. And he's gotten really good at it. And it just kind of came out. I didn't see that for him the last couple of years, but suddenly there it is.
He plays like a defensive back covering a wide receiver. You saw he had 3 steals alone that were chase steals, where he got around the guy who was fixing to get the pass, and he anticipated the read and got the pick. Once per game, Neil, he is guaranteed to get a top of the key leak out steal because he shoots the gap and he knows when to gamble. There's an IQ play with that.
Yeah.
Where he knows the ball's fixing to come back around to the top of the key. He can leave his man in the post because they're not going to get the ball in the post fast enough for him to not leave his man.
Yeah.
He knows he can leave his post because he's about to shoot the gap and go get a dunk.
He got 4. He missed one. They had one where they went to Broome. He went for the steal and whiffed.
Yeah.
Easy layup. And he didn't foul him. He was like, oh, you beat me? There you go. You can have it.
Absolutely. But it's one of those situations.
We have guests.
Hey, guys. What's up? What are y'all?
What?
Are y'all secretly like in the...
The dishwasher and the hand.
The hand washer. Oh, I like that. That's good.
That's kind of weird. The hand washer. Would you like to join us, dishwasher?
No, I'm good, but thank you.
All right.
Please continue.
We're going to play Dungeons and Elves later?
We'll play Dungeons and Elves later. That sounds good. You talk about this whole KJ situation where he just takes these gambling chances, and you're exactly right. He had that steal on Broome. It was just a better pass.
Right.
I mean, he had the position. It just was one of those lob passes where it's like, okay, this is what we're going to do. And Broome was able to get underneath for the basket. And smartly, he didn't foul because if he had, he would have been out of the game.
Yeah, yeah. And Broome, if you look at the two games he had against the Racers, on the surface, they look like really good games. They were, but they're not what he could usually have. So the Racers limit what he can do.
Yep.
Really in the first half, but he had 2 good games, but the Racers have kept him from having great games.
Yeah. And that's about all you can do with Broome because he is KJ Williams the offensive player of the year.
I think he is right now. I think he can win it next Thursday
against Belmont.
That's going to be his final vote.
The message.
There you go. Yeah. If he does well, yes. So at the moment, he's the front runner, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Based on the last three weeks.
Yeah.
At least.
Almost month.
The 33 against Martin, the 39. I mean, and the thing is that he does it when the racers, look, we got to have you. I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know how we're going to win. Like, all right, I got it.
Three's not falling.
We'll do it.
Help us out. Four games left for the racers. We've got Austin Peay on Thursday, UT Martin on Saturday at Martin, a 3:30 game. Then you got Belmont next Thursday in the final home opener, or the final home game, which, my gosh, what a delight to the senses. An 8 o'clock tip on ESPNU. I know that's a late start, but that's just a dreamy, dreamy season finale that could be for the championship, just regular season.
You could, if things
mathematically.
If things went well.
And then SEMO.
And they, there's no guarantee they're going to go with, but if things went well, you have a chance to cut nets that night.
Mm-hmm.
It could cut, but I mean, that would be the night you could do it, but. I'm sure for racer fans, there'd be no better night to do it than against Belmont. But Belmont's got a lot to say about it. I mean, they I'm sure hope they can run the table and hope someone else beats the racers. And that danger game to me looming, it's not that Austin Peay's a gimme, because it isn't, but the end of the season at SEMO, that's a tough one. And they could be having to play for a first round bye.
Yeah.
Because they're in that four hole.
They could
right
be the four
now.
Hole. Yep. You're right.
And that makes
and
it
they're
dangerous.
Good at home.
But Austin Peay, they're going to be a little bit better this week. Caleb Stone-Carowell, who didn't play against the racers, has been playing lately, has had two double-digit scoring games. I think he maybe had 8 points or something like that. But he's a good big difference maker for them. So they have an extra body, and unless Jordan Skipper-Brown comes back, they're going to be down a body. So, and he played against Austin Peay and made an impact against Austin Peay. That's the game and where he was injured. So there will be a little bit of difference there. Racer's still a little bit banged up too, but they have a few days to get healthy. And I'm not making that as an excuse. If you have probably most of the teams that have played 25-plus games, somebody's banged up. We just don't know about it. We know it from Murray State because we have contacts. The other teams, they're not telling us, but I'm sure their radio guys know.
I got a feeling Jordan Skipper-Brown, we'll see him again this season.
Oh, I think so.
Just a matter of when. You know, will it be this week? Not sure. You know,
yeah.
All time will tell. I mean, there was a boot on his foot for a reason. Don't think anything's broken, but that doesn't.
It isn't a break. I do know that.
Well, that's good, and that's good news. You know, I think that's all. That's the only news you can hope for right now. I want to pivot to the women. Still a lot to talk about with women, because you got to think. You take a look at how they were able to transition after their unfortunate overtime loss at Austin Peay, and all they've done is gone out and beaten SIUE at home. Fairly convincingly, and then two road wins at Tennessee State and at Morehead State. I know Morehead State's struggling immensely, maybe one of the worst teams in Division I basketball, but Tennessee State was kind of a surprise team,
yeah.
You know, playing this year. Not just got a new coaching staff, a lot of transfers in, a lot of them D1 transfers, pretty much trying to rebuild their program. And, you know, you think, okay, well, you know, that's kind of I don't want to call it a trap game, but Tennessee State's played pretty well this year. And all Murray State did was assist on 85% of their baskets. That's all they did.
They looked really good. Macy got off to a great start, hit three quick threes, so they jumped on him really quick. Had a really good game. I think still having a few turnover issues, and I don't know if it's this deep in the season. They're obviously not going to get that solved to a great extent, but they're doing so many other things well in getting great play. Young, yes. Turley, yes. Hannah McKay, but Alexis Burpo, it seems like every night I'm looking at the stat sheet and she's flirting with a triple double.
Mm-hmm.
Just she's always around 10 points, somewhere around 10 rebounds, sometimes anywhere from 5 to 7 assists. She just does so many things that impact winning. She's turned into one of my favorite racer players.
I want to talk a little bit about that, actually, because you take a look at some statistics, and this is just for the season. I'm not even necessarily looking at a breakdown of the OVC. Caitlin Young, number one in rebounding still. Alexis Burpo, number two in assists. Go to assists, or number two in rebounding. Go to assists. Macy Turley, third in assists. Guess who's sixth?
Burpo.
It's Burpo. Burpo is sixth in assists at 3.4 assists per game. Field goal percentage, guess who's fourth?
Burpo.
It's Burpo. She's shooting 55.7% from the field. Caitlin Young is third, shooting 60%. What else can we say about Burpo? Let's keep looking. All right, we got a lot of numbers here. Burpo is currently... Where is it? Oh, there it is. She's 21st in the league in scoring, too. She's averaging almost 11 points per game. A lot of balance, obviously. You got Caitlin Young at 19, and then a precipitous drop-off. Carly Pace, EIU graduate transfer, playing at Austin Peay. She played really well against the Racers 4 games ago. She's second in the conference in scoring, tied with Destiny Wells of Belmont. That's how good Carly Pace is. I mean, she has 48 three-pointers on the season, which is just behind Macy Turley for the league lead, and Tootie Jones from Belmont. So, I mean, she's very good, and she buried, I think, 5 three-pointers against the Racers to pretty much win that game for them. But going back to just from a numbers perspective, how good Burpo has been, I mean, it's unreal what she's been able to do. And we go to – she would qualify – she's 5th in assist-to-turnover ratio. Turley's 4th. Block shots, she's 11th in the conference. She has 16 blocks in 25 games. Three-point percentage, she's not taking a ton of three-pointers. She's not taking a ton of free throws, but her free throw percentage is up. I want to look at that number really quick because we've talked about it. Her free throw percentage in conference play, just doing some quick math here as we scroll for it. Yeah, she's shooting 81% from the free throw line in conference play.
And was horrible in high school.
She'd tell you that.
As a free throw shooter. Yeah, I mean, she was. She did a lot of things well, but you get her to the line like, oh, no.
She was about a 40, 50% free
throw shooter. Somewhere around there. But that shows you how much work she's put in, Ed, because you don't accidentally get better at free throw shooting. You have to work at it. And look what she's worked herself into. It's just she has come so far from where I thought she would be. I thought she was going to be, because of her frame, probably a little undersized for her position in terms of weight and stuff. All it does is help her. It's just unbelievable what she does. She's an amazing player to watch, and I'm glad we at least get to watch her 4 more games. But none of these are going to be easy. Do not know Macy Turley's status. She sprained her ankle against Morehead State, didn't play but 7 minutes. So it was the same ankle. I think she'll be back, but she ended up – she was in a boot as well, so – we'll see if she's going to be able to be back. And these are 2 huge games, Austin Peay Wednesday night, and then you get an afternoon game against UT Martin, who has all their available players back. All who are going to be available, they are now back for Martin.
Let me ask you this, Neil, and you may have more detail than I do. I'm just curious. I think it's cool. I think it's great for attendance and all that sort of stuff, but what happened? Why did they have the women's game on Wednesday as opposed to a doubleheader?
It's a 6 o'clock tip, so the options were going to be, you want to play the late game, you want to play at 8:30 or 9, or do you want to play in the middle of the afternoon on a Thursday? And they want a night game on a Wednesday. That's why.
I get it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the reason. They get a night game on a Wednesday when their fans can come and see them. You know, if you work, you get off 4 or 5 o'clock and they're playing at 3, well, you can't. Can't go watch them, but now you
yeah
can.
At all now, yeah, now not even a chance
but that's the reason they split it up.
Even a 5 o'clock tip,
yeah, you know, the next week they're not doing it because the Belmont game's an 8 o'clock game,
right?
So the women will still tip at 5. It won't be any, they're not going to play that many overtimes.
They'll tip at 5 and it'll still be a full reset after.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, which I'm glad. I've got to work next Thursday night for Belmont, so it's one of those situations where I should be out of work by the time I get back.
Yeah.
You know, I can come to an 8 o'clock game, I think.
Well, there'll be a lot of adjusting. I don't know if we've talked about this. I don't remember who we talked to about the what, or who I talk about the about what. But you get to the Missouri Valley Conference next year. I don't know what the schedule will go, but for this year, the schedule for the women generally Friday night and Sunday is when they play their games. There are no doubleheaders, so unless something does change, the only doubleheaders would be the non-conference games. For
no, I think that's worth bringing up again. We've talked about it before, but to know that they played Friday, Sunday this year, I think it's really interesting because you take a look at, well, high school football season is kind of waning at that point.
Right.
Like early on, you've got some high school football games that'll be on Friday night. But typically, that's not a terrible draw, I don't think. I mean, if you're playing Friday night, Sunday night, and you're the
up
only
against the high school games.
You are, but if you're the only show, at least Sunday.
Sunday is a good one.
That's yours.
Well, that's when if you flip over ESPN, that's when they have all the big college games. That's the game you want to play on Sunday afternoon on ESPN or somewhere like that.
I don't hate that.
Yeah.
You know, that's at least going to give women's basketball a little bit of a platform. I could see it being difficult on Friday night. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And I can see even the concerns. Well, the doubleheader crowd in Murray is usually what draws us. You know, third and fourth quarter, we're bringing in a pile – pile of kids and a pile of families that bring right. that extra second wave, you know, at the CFSB Center. But yeah, I could see that being a concern, I guess, maybe just a little bit. But yeah, like I said, if you have the Sunday game, it's, you know, and it's the marquee game of the conference, that's
yeah.
a lot of eyes are going to be on that. A couple other notes about women's basketball. And again, I think a lot of it, you Neil, you hit the nail on the head. Hey, just such a good swing for them after that tough Austin Peay loss. You take a look at, though, you know, you're 18-7, 10-4 in OVC play. Hey, when's the last time they had 17 wins? Is it 2008, 2009?
I don't know. I mean, it's been a while. This is a program that, I mean, they've had success in the past,
yeah.
I mean, but it hasn't been real consistent. And Rochelle's continued to basically build year after year after year, try to build the program the right way. And I think you're seeing the fruits of that. I never had any doubt she would do it. And you take a look at what her and her staff have done, and you're starting to really see a lot of great results.
Well, and that's kind of what I was bringing up. I'm almost certain. Give me 8 milliseconds here as I get the quick facts up, courtesy of Parker Griffith. I'm almost certain that the last time they had 17 wins would have been, I think it's 2008, 2009, because that's the first time, that's the last time that they had even an overall winning record in the OVC and a winning OVC record. So you have to go back that far just to see 17 wins, you know, and they're now 18-7. That's, you know, and last year they went 16-11. So each year just keeps getting a little better and a little better and a little better. And you just don't want to wish it away. Quick note here. Murray State women's basketball has 3 of the league's top 5 rebounders. I want to toss Hannah McKay in that discussion as she continues to play extremely well in the last 3 weeks. I think also super quick. Here it is, Neil. In league play, Caitlin Young, of course, averaging 19 points per game. Hannah McKay averaging 13 points per game. Macy Turley averaging 13 points per game. Burpo averaging 12. You got Alexis, you got Alexis Burpo going averaging 12. You got Lex Mays averaging 6. Bria Sanders Wood averaging 5. Woods averaging 5. Jada Black averaging 2 and 2.5 rebounds. And then you have Kaysen Connor, who's played in all 14 games. She's played 158 minutes, not shooting it particularly well. She has 16 assists, 12 turnovers. She's become a key role player and has stayed consistently in that role on the bench. They're shooting 48% from the field in league play. Opponents are shooting 40. They're shooting 35% from 3, which is pretty dang good for a squad, and holding teams to 31. They're shooting 82% as a team from the free throw line, Neil. 82%. They're out-rebounding teams by 8 currently, and their assist to turnover ratio is not horrific, but you are right, they certainly have experienced a swath of turnovers in a lot of different ways. 188 turnovers in 14 games.
And so, the Moorhead game, they had a ton of them. Moorhead had very few, but Moorhead wasn't good in hardly any other area.
Couldn't score.
That was basically the only area where the Racer women were bad. They were good in virtually every other area.
They're outscoring teams by about 11 each game, 72.8 to 61.9. That's in conference play. And you take a look at the conference losses outside of the lopsided defeat at Belmont, 15 points on the road at the Curb Center, which is tough to beat Belmont there. You lost by 3 to Tennessee Tech. You lost by 7 to Eastern Illinois in overtime. And then you lost by 2 at Austin Peay in overtime. You're that close to a 20-win season, and you can get that with 4 games left, you know, and it obviously starts with a big one this Wednesday against Austin Peay, a team you'd love to maybe get some revenge on after a tough overtime loss. So don't know if Macy will be back by then. You mentioned the injury. I've been told I think it's going to be day-to-day, but you have to think about it from a long-term perspective. You need a win. I mean, you always need a win. I don't mean that, but if you're wanting to stay on the pace, you definitely would like to go 2-0 this week, but you also need Macy Turley healthy. So do you play her on Wednesday limited, or do you hold her back and hope for the best and see what happens moving forward? It's a good question to ask, and Well, we'll know. We'll know soon. We'll know in the next 48 hours whether or not she's going to play. Something else I want to mention. The next two home games, the last two home games of the season, Neil, going to have some visitors.
I hear that. Yeah.
Rumor has it, one Ja Morant is going to be in town for Thursday.
And by rumor, he said he was going to be there, yeah, so that's a pretty strong rumor.
Yeah, it's a rumor has it. I just like, that's such a great line from Adele. I like saying rumor has it. But yeah, rumor has it. Spoiler, he's going to be in town. Don't know what sort of media availability is going to be there, but doesn't matter. I suggest that he comes out with the M.
Is that right?
I want him to come out with the M, with the flags, running around, just razzing up the fan base as much as possible on Thursday.
If he asks to do that, I'm sure they will let him do it. That will be up to him.
And then, hopefully, and then next Thursday, Shaq Buchanan of the Memphis Hustle will be in town for the Belmont game. So,
and I did hear that Austin B, when they said he was going to be there, he said he isn't playing, right?
I mean, he's still got some eligibility.
No, I mean, it's kind of an ice storm over here, maybe, and stuff. So we might need to push that to Friday.
Yeah,
or something.
We're not. But the weather's bad. We can't get there. I wanted to look really quick because Ja is having obviously a really special season. You and I have already talked about the fact that he has made the All-Star game. The All-Star game is in Cleveland this weekend, if I'm not mistaken. I'm just Googling it super quick to make sure. It's February 16. No, that's not right. No. Sorry. Thank you. Yeah. 2022 All-Star Game. I look silly, but I was like, wait a second. That's not right. Yeah, that's what I thought. It is this weekend. It's February 20th. I'm sorry. I want to make this clear, what I was saying. February 16th, some tickets have gone on sale. Our tickets are going on sale for the All-Star Weekend. But February 20th, this weekend, is All-Star Weekend. Ja still has two games to play before he even comes to Murray State on Thursday. So it's going to be an incredible send-off for him for the All-Star game. I think it's terrific. It's kind of on his way up here. They got a home game. Then he'll head up here, and then he'll head to Cleveland. So that's, you know, kind of on the way for him in a roundabout way. So it makes sense for him to stop on by. And I thought it was cool, first of all, Neil, that he got a chance to announce it. It wasn't really anybody else. I mean, I'm sure McMahon knew. I'm sure Kevin Saul knew. I'm sure noted dignitaries and officials knew. But it was cool that Ja was the one that was like, can't wait to see you guys on Thursday. And then everybody was like, holy crap, Ja's going to be in town. And the same with Shaq. Shaq got to announce, hey, I'm going to be there for the Belmont game.
Oh, and one other thing. Matt, he said he went for his run today, and in front of the arena there was lines for tickets for Austin P. I didn't realize Austin P suddenly was that big a draw, but obviously it is.
Yeah.
Or is it the Morant draw?
Or the ranked. Maybe it's all of it.
That is. Yeah, they're 21st ranked. Well, they're a good enough draw without having any help. Just so having Ja's going to be there, and it won't hurt. Yeah. There won't be someone go, well, I'm not going if he's going
to
be there.
I'm not going to lie, Neil. I get off work at 5 o'clock on Thursday. I'll make it to the women's game. You know, clearly, you know, the second half. I'm looking forward to the energy. I mean, you know, no matter how many it ends up being, sellout or not, I think the energy is going to be great. I think don't want to wish it away, but I think the energy will be great against Belmont. That needs a little introduction, anyways. I think it's cool that Shaq's going to be there. I want to mention a few stats. Ja right now is averaging on the season, just to give a little bit of a primer here on what he's just been doing. Well, first of all, he leads the Memphis Grizzlies in multiple categories. But at this moment, currently, with two games to go this week before the All-Star game, who's his starter, by the way, which you and I have mentioned that, he is averaging 26.4 points per game, just seventh in the league. Seventh. Just seventh. 5.9 rebounds per game, which is top 60. He's 59th. 6.8 assists per game, which is 14th, which, you know, is pretty solid. And then his player efficiency rating is 24.69, which is 9th. His VORP, his value over a replacement player, I would look this up this morning, courtesy of Stan Van Gundy. Thanks, Stan. Is top 15. He is a top. He is legitimately, mathematically, a top 10 player in the league. I'm not going to put first, second, or third. I think, you know, Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic, LeBron James, the list goes on. Giannis Antetokounmpo, former NBA MVP and now you know, NBA champion and MVP. There are a ton of guys that are playing. Kevin Durant, you know, is going to come back from injury and be terrific for the Nets again. Like, it just, there are so many guys. DeMar DeRozan's playing well for Chicago. I can keep going on and on. Steph Curry's doing Steph things in, at Golden State, you know. But it's amazing to think that among all of those names that I've just mentioned and how well they're all playing, Morant is playing as well, and a lot of times better. Just from a game log perspective, last five games, Neil, I'll regale you with this. Five wins, by the way, against Charlotte, Detroit, Clippers, Orlando, and the New York Knicks.
And in the bottom line, that's what they pay him to do, is right. to win.
Win.
Yeah, not score X points.
Yeah, he's averaging, just in this month of February, leading into the All-Star game, 27 points per game, 6.6 assists per game, 5.2 rebounds per game. He's shooting 51%, and that's with him shooting 18% from three and 64% from the free throw line. So, you know, a couple places he probably would like to improve on.
Yep.
Playing 31 minutes per game. They have scored 120 points or more in the last five games. They lost in an overtime game against Philly to end the month of February, or to end the month of January, and he put up 37 points in that game. I don't know what to say. I mean, he's just doing things that I'm not going to say we didn't think he was going to do, but there just always seems to be a new superlative.
I know.
To say, like, every time you see it, you're like, well, all right, he's good.
Yeah.
He's really good.
Always,
what do you say?
Did you see Morant's highlight last night? Well, what do you do now? And usually it'll be something, my God, I've never seen that.
Right.
What the heck?
Yeah, it's absolutely astounding. I want to talk about Shaq Buchanan briefly, because I know you and I are going to be really busy the next couple of weeks. Shaq comes in next Thursday. Shaq, meanwhile, I know the Memphis Hustle have been shuffling guys in and out. They've not had a lot of continuity. They've been calling guys up and down. Shaq has been – he started 15 of 16 games for Memphis. He's averaging 21 points per game for them. He's one of their top scorers. He's shooting 44% from the field, 30.3% from three, which is probably his most improved statistic in the last year. He's shooting 71% from the free throw line. He's also averaging nearly four assists and nearly six rebounds a game. So in G League play, he's averaging roughly 21, 4, and 6 with 2.5 turnovers a game. I mean, I don't know what – and I say all these things. Terry Taylor's playing well out of the OVC,
yeah.
From the OVC. He's playing well for the Indiana Pacers and Rick Carlisle. The OVC's just got dudes, man.
They do. They do.
And I love to see it.
And I'm glad, because we're in a spot now where we can root for Terry Taylor instead
yeah.
of – I mean, I didn't root against him like, oh, I hope you get 0 points. Only when the Racers played him. I wasn't actively rooting against him. But now I can actively – I want to see him do well. I know that Murray State's going to the MVC, but I still love the OVC. I want good things to happen to it. I'm not against them. So I want really good things to happen for them. A lot of great memories from there. And hopefully they'll get the ship righted. Even if it's with some Division II schools and down the road, they'll be right back and be really solid.
You bring in an excellent but accidental segue. We don't have too many more subjects to talk about, but I wanted to bring that up. University of Southern Indiana recently announced not only their intent for Division I, but they're headed to the Ohio Valley Conference. What are your initial thoughts about that?
If you're going to bring up a Division II to Division I, and you're looking to strengthen your basketball portfolio as a conference, that's the best they could have done. They couldn't do any better than that. That great arena. And I don't know the long-term deal in Evansville for the Ford Center, but if they have Southern Indiana there, it'll still be okay. They'll still be okay if they have it in Evansville.
But I love it.
But I don't know. But I think it's a great move. You know, Little Rock's down a little bit, but I think they'll be back. They have a history of being back. The big rumor, I was talking with a couple of people, it looks like maybe Lindenwood is maybe going to be the next one that they mentioned. And there still seems to be all sorts of rumors afloat on the football end that there could be a merger, maybe in one sport only, football for OVC Big South. But I haven't really nailed that down with anybody, because neither league will talk to you about that.
Well, and you got to wonder, too, whether they want to talk to you about it or not. You got to figure out how many teams they just even want to have.
Yeah.
Do you want to have six, or do you just want to go ahead and let's just merge and have 14, 12, whatever?
And the fact that they're adding basketball schools that don't play football already tells me I really do believe they have some sort of plan in place to fix that once Murray State leaves after this season, as is anticipated, and goes to the Missouri Valley Football Conference.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's just something that's you talk about USI, you talk about University of Arkansas Little Rock. I'm going to ask this. Is Evansville big enough for two Division I teams? Kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, there's, yeah, it's a
it's what, a basketball yeah. hungry town.
Yeah, it's you're in Indiana. I think it is. I don't have any issue with that at all. Yeah,
you got your own airport. They have their own. Two of them have they have beautiful arenas. I love the Ford Center. I've been told by more than one source that the USI was arena has been D1 ready for years, mm-hmm. and that it's a terrific facility. Never been. Would love to go. Bellarmine knows all about it. Oh, by the way, look at how good Bellarmine's playing right now.
Yeah.
Look at how good they've been in the A-Sun. Look at how good Jacksonville State's been in the A-Sun until they took a couple tough losses.
Yeah.
Bellarmine's good. You just think about this non-conference schedule the Racers play.
Well, the shocker isn't them. I thought they'd be good. The shocker is the team that the Racers absolutely manhandled. We're crying for mommy. Long Beach State.
Yes.
They're in first place.
They are in first
in
place.
In their league. They've been winning games right and left, Ed. And the Racers made them look like a D2 team in that tournament.
They destroyed them.
But it was the night after the ETSU where, people, I wish we had that game back. Well, I do too, but we didn't deserve to win the game. We didn't play well enough to win the game. But, boy, we sure played well enough to win the next game.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And then came back against James Madison.
Yeah, yeah. So two good games after that. And that's actually set the stage for what you've seen here. Didn't beat Auburn. Not many people have been beating Auburn at Auburn, so we are in pretty good company right there.
And it took a road loss against Arkansas?
Yeah.
For Auburn to lose?
Yeah, and that was at the end. They lost on a bucket late.
Yep.
So
unreal, man. Well, I'm glad I was able to mention at least a little bit of that. Shaq Buchanan, John Moran in town. I certainly hope people take advantage of that.
Yes.
Should be two good games. Last thing I want to say. Former Murray State racer Mitch Stewart has a new job.
Okay.
He is headed to Middle Tennessee State University to be their offensive coordinator.
How about that?
I didn't know if you'd seen that.
I hadn't seen that, no.
No, breaking news to you. Yeah, the Athletic broke it, and then Craig Haley of FCS confirmed it this morning. Don't know if the contract's in place. Obviously, he just spent the last 2 years with Chris Hatcher at Samford, including this past year where he was offensive coordinator. Recollected things and now is headed to FBS rank.
Well, good for Mitch. I think a lot of Mitch and I'm
ranking football.
You.
So
hope they do well. Unless he has changed stuff, get ready for exciting offensive football in Murfreesboro.
Oh yeah, high octane offense for sure.
Plus, lots you can criticize all you want. Oh, Middle Tennessee, they're a lower level FBS team. Here's what I know. The last 3 years, they played in the Bahamas Bowl, Ed. That's where they've ended the season. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good to me. If not in the Rose Bowl, Orange Bowl. If I'm not going to be – some of those bowls, I don't know if I want to go to that. I want to go to the Bahamas Bowl.
Oh, and they won this year.
Yeah.
They beat Toledo 31-24 on December 17th.
Yeah, I'd take that.
Oh, I'd take it too. And I was going to say from a statistics standpoint, not only do they play in Conference USA, which is in the middle of – trying to rebuild and rebrand itself right now as to what they're doing. But Middle Tennessee has had a lot of success in Conference USA.
Right.
So, well, Neil, that yawn tells me all I need to know. Hey, I got to go to bed,
too.
Well,
I didn't get enough sleep last night. I had Super Bowl.
Hey, yeah. No, I'll leave with this. Super Bowl should be played on a Saturday night.
I've heard discussions of that, and I don't know why they don't. It sounds like a good idea.
It makes sense to me because then everybody could have that Sunday to recoup because you're up partying for whatever reason. Real quick. So far, the only games confirmed for Middle Tennessee State football this next year, James Madison, Colorado State, Tennessee State, and the University of Miami.
Whoa.
So, that'd be interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll be interesting indeed. Well, Neil, it's been fun. It's been real.
It has.
It's been real fun. We'll if I don't see you on Thursday, well, I mean, I'll see you at the game on Thursday, but I don't know. Next time we talk, might be OVC tournament time. We'll
Could
see
be.
How everything goes.
All right. I hope so.
Thanks, Neil.